Dottle Talks Tech, episode number 29, Travis Ritchie and Inspector Spacetime. Dottle.
It's Dottle Talks Tech with James DeRuvo.
I never touch another man's butt.
Online at dottlenews.com.
Comic-Con, Kickstarter, and Inspector Spacetime is the subject of this week's Dottle Talks Technology. And with me is Travis Ritchie, an actor and writer in Hollywood, who has appeared in such TV shows as Sons of Tucson, The Event, Pretty Little Liars, and on Community, where he was cast in the role of Inspector Spacetime, a role that launched him into the spotlight of Doctor Who's fans everywhere. Travis, thank you for joining us on Dottle Talks Technology.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I ran into you at Comic-Con. How was the con for you? Yeah, on the trolley. How was which, if you're going to meet Inspector Spacetime, the trolley is the place to meet.
You know, I actually ran into people every day on the trolley that we ended up chatting with on the way, and it's very nice because it's as long as people enjoy talking to you, it's a really intimate place to chat because everyone is squeezed into each other. It's kind of like the booth from my show, actually, because it's always slightly too small for however many people are inside, and that's what the Comic-Con trolley is like.
Yeah, indeed, and you're right. It is a great place. I mean, I had great conversations every single day traveling from the Qualcomm Stadium all the way over to the convention center. It takes about, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah, about there. It wasn't
great time, great opportunity to have just like a quick little chat.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So how was your Comic-Con?
Oh, wow. It was nice. It was I went in with – I say that I went in with no agenda, but that's not quite true. I guess by what I mean by that is I wasn't there to go to panels and to do things like that. So I didn't feel a pressure to see a lot of stuff. What I went to do was to meet a few actors and artists, actors for the movie that we're doing and then artists for the comic book that we're doing. So I needed to make those connections and I did that. And other than that, I did go to a few panels. I walked around and saw some stuff, looked at people's costumes, and I really had a good time. It was very low key for me.
Did you cosplay?
I did not. I thought about dressing up as the inspector one day just because some fans had asked for it. And I always try to do that at conventions for one day at least so that people can take pictures. However, because I had some professional things I needed to accomplish, I needed to not, you know?
Yeah. I kind of like what Adam Savage does, the Mythbusters. He does a thing called Adam Incognito, where every year he dresses up in a series of costumes that you can't really tell it's him.
Oh, sure.
And the idea is for you to find him.
Oh, okay.
And this year he did a Mercury astronaut with the shade pulled down so you couldn't really see his face.
Uh-huh.
And then he also did a spacesuit from Alien with a facehugger on it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's always kind of fun. And I heard that Peter Jackson showed up and was dressed as this bizarre clown.
Those guys are far more famous than I am, though, so I can get away with walking across the floor, and maybe three people will stop and say, "Oh, hey!" But other than that, people, I'm one of those people who it was still incognito enough just by being me.
So let's talk about Inspector Spacetime. Now, you share the interesting and singular distinction of taking a role from a TV show and turning it into your own little cottage industry web series.
Yeah,
And you've not only managed to navigate the rights holding for Community and NBC, but because it's Inspector Spacetime, it's kind of loosely based on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So you managed to get the BBC's blessing. How did you do that?
Well, it was okay. It's complicated. When I did the role on NBC, we were there shooting it, and it was just a little show within a show thing. We didn't know if it was going to be anything other than that one thing. Although I, as a fan of Community, kind of knew how they worked, and they had a history of doing supplemental content for things like the Kick Puncher comic book, and then NBC has a history of doing supplemental content for things like Heroes and The Office. They've done web series, and I said to myself, well, actually, I said it to the other people on set, which was all second unit. You know, nobody important or nobody integral to the show was on that first day, and I was like, you know, we should do a. Like a bonus episode of Inspector Spacetime for like the DVD or something, for the season 3 DVD or maybe a web series. And the people were like, yeah, that's funny. And so on the way home from that shoot, I called my writing partner, and we had been doing web series for, you know, several years at that point. I called him up and said, hey, let's write a web series for this thing. It's we both liked Doctor Who at that point. Him actually much more than I was at that point. I was a little late to the Doctor Who game, but I called him and said, you know, let's write a web series in case I get back on the show a second time, and then I can have a script and pitch it to them and say, hey, maybe you know, if you guys are going to do a web series or something bonus for Inspector Spacetime, maybe you want to do our thing. And so we wrote this web series, which was also designed to be a bonus episode, like a 20-minute, you know, episode of a sitcom, because we didn't know which one they would prefer. So we wrote it to be both. And sure enough, I got back on the show a second time and did pitch it. But they basically were and that second episode was cool because it was directed by the Russo brothers, who are the guys that ended up doing Captain America 2. Yeah. And then also Chris McKenna, who is now one of the executive producers on the show, was the writer of that episode. It was the Chaos Theory episode, really great episode. And they actually directed the second unit stuff, which was kind of unusual, but very cool. And essentially, they told me, well, we can't look at scripts because, you know, that's just not how it works. Scripts always have to be submitted through agents and stuff like that. So
unsolicited, yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. So I did that. I actually had my agent submitted to their digital, to Sony and NBC's digital departments, and just got no word whatsoever. No, yes, no. Just nothing. And
yeah, the same thing happened to me. I wrote a script for Star Trek The Next Generation during the first season. And
wow.
I heard absolutely nothing until a year after Gene Roddenberry died.
Oh, wow.
And then they sent it back to me.
Yeah, it was too early. That's the problem. Because, I mean, they hadn't really Star Trek. It was an interesting story. I've become friends with a bunch of Star Trek writers, including Melinda Snodgrass, who got her start by doing a spec script for Next Gen and now is a pro writer. But anyway, so what – you know, in the middle of season 3 of Community, eventually they – just yanked, NBC did, yanked the show off the schedule and didn't really tell anybody why or what was going on. None of the fans knew when it was coming back or if it was coming back. And at the same time, Inspector Spacetime had already exploded on the internet. Fans were out there making, you know, creating an entire history of this fake show.
Now, this is the web series that you created.
Well, not even yet. We're not even that far yet. Just when Inspector Spacetime appeared on Community, fans created this entire history of this fake show. Like, they took the framework of Doctor Who and the spark of creativity that Inspector Spacetime gave them, and they just went crazy on the internet creating stuff, including they did T-shirts and posters and artwork and iPhone cases and all this stuff, including, you know, some of that was merchandise that people were making money on. So I looked at that, and I looked at the fact that Community was in danger. And I said, okay, look, I had at the time a panel that I was going to be at the world's largest Doctor Who convention, Gallifrey One, here in Los Angeles. And I said, okay, well, I've got this soapbox. Let me use that to launch a web series.
And it's not like you haven't done web series. You kind of were kind of known as a web series guy on YouTube with a series including Robot Ninja and Gay Guy, Two Guys in the Shower, and Smiley Town.
Yeah. And so I had a history of doing web series, and I was comfortable with that. And so we said, okay, let's go ahead and announce a web series. We'll have fans fund it. We won't make any money off of it. We just want to tell this. We just want, you know, obviously people want it, so let's go ahead and do it. And I I did a lot of research into copyright at the time. The only two things, I mean, if you've seen Inspector Spacetime on Community, it's a tiny little clip of it's 15 seconds and exactly three lines of dialogue.
It's just enough that they could get away with it.
Exactly. And so I looked at what they'd created, which was essentially four things. The title Inspector Spacetime, which you can't copyright. The look of the character, which is just a guy in a bowler hat and a trench coat, so you can't copyright that. And then his sidekick, Constable Reggie, which we weren't using, and Blorgons, which we also weren't using. So we really weren't infringing on anything with our web series idea. But when I announced it, and it got huge press when we announced it, like it was all over the internet, and we raised something like $4,000 the first day. Within a few days, we were up at $9,000. And then I got a call from a Sony lawyer. That's who said, you can't do this. You have to shut this web series down. And I had written her before her call because she had emailed my agent first. And he had nothing to do with it. So he wrote me frantically. He's like, you got to deal with this.
What the hell are you doing?
Exactly. And so I emailed her this really great email, and you can link to it. It's on the Facebook page, actually, in the notes section. And it's this, basically where I outline all of the copyright arguments, all of the benefits of the show, everything basically saying you should help me do this. But I don't think she read it because she called me really fast when I emailed that to her. And I told her, no, I don't have to shut it down because I'm not infringing on anything. What I will do, because I don't want to even look like I'm fighting with Community, which is one of my favorite shows, mm-hmm. I will change the title. And I will change the look of the character so that those two things aren't the same. But other than that, we can do the show. And I have, and people will still know that it's Inspector Spacetime. And I even told her, I said, people are giving us money. I mean, you guys speak money, so you should understand. You should want to do this. But if you don't want to, I'll make those changes. But I will have to tell people why I'm making the changes. And they're not going to be mad at me. Sony, they're going to be mad at the big multinational corporation not giving them what they want.
I love the title that you used.
Yeah,
Untitled web series about a space traveler who can also travel through time.
Yes, because I wanted it to be very clear what it was, and also that it wasn't. We were being forced to kind of do that. So yeah, that was me being snarky.
Yeah. Now, did you have to, they could not refer to you as Inspector, or were you able to get away with that because it's just a generic title?
Well, you can't copyright a job title, right?
Right.
So we kept it the Inspector, and that's what he is. He's the Inspector. And we even play with the space-time thing. We in the end of the web series, every episode says, we have three questions. It's like a Batman thing, or the end of Batman's the 60s series, where they're like, "What will happen next week? Tune in next week." Same, and so we did that too. We said, "Same space channel, same space time."
That's awesome.
And so
you did six episodes.
We did six episodes of the first season, got a lot of great press. The response was huge for us. And then we decided to do a second season. But now with the name change and the costume change, I mean, we decided to do that because now we owned it. So it's now we weren't saddled with the responsibility of having to appeal to anyone else. We could do whatever we want.
So you were able to successfully walk through the Sony /community/NBC minefield.
Yeah, which was not much. I mean, really just right. That one phone call and
more just
nobody ever pressure, issued a cease and desist.
Trying
nobody
to make
ever
yeah. back down, but yeah.
Nobody ever did anything. And they'd never, I mean, they obviously don't care about it. They haven't, they've never even registered a trademark for it, even though they sold one t-shirt. But the stuff that fans are producing, t-shirts and artwork and stuff, is so much more awesome than anything NBC could do.
Yeah, I actually think you were wearing a fan t-shirt when I met you.
Yeah, that's what I did. I took a bunch of t-shirts to Comic-Con that were all made by fans. I've only made one t-shirt for the Inspector, and it's okay, but not, I love what the fans are doing better.
But what I think is funny is that you told me that the BBC featured you on their website.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
we've
like
been
you
on
have
the BBC
you have the blessing of the doctor.
The
almost.
inexplicit, you know, but yeah it's definitely something they really like stuff that either parodies Doctor Who or is made with a love of Doctor Who. So the BBC is much, much different as a non-US entertainment company, I think. They really get that fanworks are good for the brand.
I think fanworks are really becoming serious artwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done a couple. I mean, back in the 90s, I did a Star Wars film and I did a Star Trek film.
Oh, cool.
And I got like over a million views on both, so it was like really sweet. But then I kind of got married and, you know, got busy. And but I mean, you look at, you know, this Axanar series that's coming out, that Star Trek, that has like some serious Star Trek actors in it.
Yeah.
You've managed to cast Sylvester McCoy, Robert Picardo, and Chase Masterson, who's pretty much making a living now being an actor on a web series. And, you know, she's really good.
Yeah, and, well, she also is part of the Doctor Who world now too, with the Big Finish Productions.
Yeah, and you got the voice of
Mayim Bialik.
Mayim Bialik, who plays the voice of your Booth, which is the Inspector Spacetime version of the TARDIS.
Yes, 3-time Emmy nominated actress. I know.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And Robert Picardo actually has an Emmy to his name too for his work on The Wonder Years.
And it's being directed now. Nick Acosta, that name sounds familiar. Is he the one that did the Bat, like there was like a Batman fan film, or am I thinking of the Battle of, no, it was the Battle of Hogwarts.
Battle of Hogwarts is Nick's. Yeah, yeah.
He did the Harry Potter thing.
Yeah, and that's how I found him too, and was very, like, after the first season, the director that I worked with didn't seem too into the show, and I wanted to find someone who was just really excited about it, and also someone who could take the show to a new level of, you know, I wanted it to be as cool as possible. On Community, the Inspector was kind of cheesy, you know, kind of the 70s and 80s type Doctor Who. I wanted to be cooler than current Doctor Who if we could manage it. And so so I found Nick and just actually at a party, and I talked to him about his work and then watched Battle of Hogwarts and was amazed what he was able to do as a guerrilla filmmaker with this really unique idea. For people who don't know, it's the idea is it's 20 years in the future, and this is a documentary style web series that interviews the survivors of the Battle of Hogwarts. And he didn't
get
permission.
Any of the characters, though. I mean, like people that just happen to be there.
I think you get a glimpse at some of the characters. I can't. It's been years since I watched it, but
it was interesting. It was really well done.
Yeah, and the thing that really sparked my interest was that he was able to create special effects. A lot of the shots that are in there that are of Hogwarts or of Hogsmeade or the different locations in the Harry Potter universe were all either shot guerrilla style or created, which I thought was really, really inventive. And Nick is, one of the most amazing directors I've ever worked with. He is so enthusiastic about things that he likes, and working with him on set is just, he has this infectious energy about him that is so much fun. You can see him in our behind-the-scenes stuff for the prequel episode. It's just so much fun to watch him work, and he's so talented. He has a really great eye. So visually, he's amazing. He edited the prequel episode, and he edits, I think, most of his own work, which is really interesting, and certainly is a weight off of me. I've been editing most of my work until then, so... So yeah, it's great to have him on board, and he's going to be directing the movie, which might be his first feature, actually. If he's got another feature that he's working on, but I think we might come in ahead of it.
Okay, so you were thinking about doing a second season.
Yes.
But then the Doctor showed up.
Exactly. I mean, we started to get these really great actors, and people were really into the script, and it is, if I can say it without too much self-aggrandizement, it's an amazing script, and we start getting these actors like Robert Picardo and Mayim Bialik and Chase Masterson, and then we got Sylvester McCoy, and I met Sylvester over tea in London at a pub, and it's just, the whole thing was surreal.
It's one of those surreal moments where you go, oh my God, I'm having tea with the Doctor. That's bizarre.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had a similar deal premiering my Star Wars movie back in the 90s, where I was, we were premiering this movie in my hotel room with, with a half a dozen of the actors from Star Wars.
Oh yeah, yeah, you told me.
Sitting on my bed, and I'm going
incredible.
And I see, and I'm watching it, and all of a sudden I stopped watching my movie, and I started looking around and watching, and how these guys were just enraptured in this movie, and I thought, this is the strangest thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, I know. Watching these people who you've seen on the big screen.
Right. Watching people who I watched, watching what I made. It's just right. Bizarre. And so you kind of had that same kind of out-of-body experience with a fan, or with someone you were a fan of.
Totally. And I mean, and in the last year especially, I've gotten into meeting a bunch of people that I have looked up to as creators and as writers, and they're telling me that they like my work, and it's just it's amazing to me, and I don't think I'll ever get used to that. I hope I never do, because it's cool.
And so you decided, well, we can go bigger, and so you decided right. to go on to raise money on Kickstarter and make a movie.
Right. So there were two reasons why that we did the movie. One was that. I mean, this was before Sylvester came about. I'd kind of kicked around the idea because we actually had a failed Kickstarter campaign for the second season of the web series. So we did the prequel episode and we produced that. Didn't get a lot of press or a lot of response about it, even though it was so much cooler than season one. And we had Robert Picardo and Mayim Bialik in it. We just kind of slipped under the radar. And so... So the fundraising for the season two proper failed. And so I'm looking at that going, okay, well, how do we do that? And one of my ideas was, we already have a couple of big actors on board. It might be worth it to do a movie instead of a web series, because it's generally easier to raise investors for a movie than it is to raise donations for a web series.
Was that one of the lessons you learned from the failed campaign? Because I've written a couple of articles on people that have looked at their failed campaigns and actually have learned from them.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from a failed campaign?
I always try to learn something. And that's just the best way to live life. And that was – there are different things that I learned from it. One is that it's harder to fund a complete series rather than, you know, you can fund an episode or two, and then if you make, you can actually make your stretch goals more episodes, and that's easy. The problem is with our show, we couldn't do that for season two because it all is basically one episode broken up into six acts, and so I was actually gonna step away from Inspector Spacetime for a little bit and focus on we're working on getting back to Robot Ninja and Gay Guy, as well as some smaller Inspector Spacetime things like a radio show and just more modest things until we built our audience up again, or you know, to something a little larger. And then I got the call from Sylvester, and once he said he wanted to do it, I was like, okay, well. We were in this period of time. It was the end of it was November, I think, and we had Gallifrey 1 coming up. And so here's what I thought. Well, look, we have Gallifrey 1, which is going to give me a great place to announce. It's the perfect place to announce that Sylvester McCoy is joining the cast. It's the perfect place to get the most response from that kind of news. And if we announce that we're doing a movie too, what we can do is we can start with, we can do a fundraiser, and we did one, the purpose of which was twofold. One was to give us the means to do some pre-production stuff that we needed to accomplish, including making the script, converting it from a season two of a web series script, which is about 60 minutes, into a feature script, which was about an hour and a half. There's lots of things that need to go into changing that, along with structure, we needed to add a couple sequences. So that's a lot of work. The second reason we did the web series was because one of the things I wanted to have in my back pocket when we're going to look for investors is proof of our audience. So we had already raised at that point $37,000 on two different campaigns on Kickstarter. But I wanted to really show what our audience was capable of. And so we asked for $25,000 and we ended up raising $38,000.
On Indiegogo.
On Indiegogo this time.
Now, why did you make the switch? Is that because of the flexible funding campaign?
Two reasons. One, because of the flexible funding. And so with this particular type of campaign, so with the other two campaigns on Kickstarter, if we didn't raise our budget, if we didn't raise our goal, we couldn't have done what we wanted to do. So it didn't matter if we, you know, if I didn't want to be responsible for a partially raised budget. So either we did it all or we didn't do anything. With this campaign, it's different because we were going for a pre-production run, which allows us to scale our goals to whatever we raised. The other reason was that my my YouTube network, The Collective, had an agreement with Indiegogo. They had gone into partnership, so they were encouraging me to use Indiegogo. It also costs less to use Indiegogo. So there were a few different – also, Indiegogo does PayPal, which is really great for my international fans, of which I have about 30%.
Yeah, Kickstarter only uses Amazon. So.
Yeah, so there are lots of reasons why Indiegogo worked better for us on that project, and I'll probably actually use them on my next project too. It was a really great experience.
And so what's next as far as the movie goes?
Well, we just a couple weeks ago finished the script and had a public – not a public reading, a private, very informal reading of the script where I cast every other role. So I didn't even cast myself as the inspector. I just wanted to sit back as a writer and listen to the words. And it was really, really well received. We did a couple of – let's see. Couple of rewrites, or we actually did one more rewrite after that, just polishing it. And so now we have a final shooting script, and we just got distribution lined up. So we've actually got distribution before the movie is ever shot, which is a really good thing, a really good tool to go to investors with. And now the only thing we're waiting for is to find investors. And we've got a couple of things, a couple of tools we're using for that, including Slated.com. And I also have hired a guy whose job it is to find investors.
Think you might go back to Indiegogo for the actual production funding?
No, I don't think so. I think I don't think, honestly, that we'd be able to raise the money that we need in donations. It's really tough to raise donations for a web series or for a film project because you're not selling every other thing that's on Indiegogo or Kickstarter. You are essentially pre-selling the product. So if it's a game or if it's a product, a piece of technology, you're pre-buying that. And then you can always spend more if you want extras. But for movies and television, it's really tough to do that because you, especially for web series, it's all going to be free. For movies, it's going to be out there in the world. It's just a little – it's a lot harder to pre-sell those things.
Not to mention that you may raise $35,000 or $1 million on crowdfunding, but that doesn't mean you're actually going to collect that amount of money. Because, I mean, I remember doing an article about Freddie Wong in his first season of VGHS, mm-hmm. and they had 25% of their budget disappeared due to rejected charge cards.
Oh, interesting.
And
that's one of the interesting things also about Indiegogo is that they charge you, especially if you're doing flex funding, they charge you right away. So you don't have that problem. But I did also have that problem with Kickstarter. Not 25%. That seems excessive. But definitely that is something you need to be aware of. But I think that we are going to do well with investors, and it puts us on a path where if we are successful with this movie, then we become more appealing to investors for the next movie. And we do have like a 3-movie plan for The Inspector. And so that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to go a little bigger than what we...
Now, are you going to be delivering it digitally online, or are you looking for theatrical release?
The distribution plan has a combination of all that. So theatrical would be a small theatrical release, including some festivals. The digital release would be a rollout. So you'd start with the pay-per-view
like
type of
Vimeo's video on demand or
yeah YouTube has one too, iTunes, stuff like that, and then we've got someone from Netflix waiting to see it, so that would be you know, the subscription model would come next after that. So yeah, it's a whole schedule of a rollout that, I mean, I'm worrying about that so far down the line, it's not even on my mind yet. It's just kind of a basic this is probably what'll happen.
So looking back on how this all evolved,
mm-hmm.
what if you're looking at budding filmmakers who are looking to follow their passion and to cut their teeth on making movies based or making short films and movies based on their favorite movie or TV series or even video games, I know those are very popular.
Yeah, definitely.
What are your thoughts?
Well, making fan films is a tricky thing because you can't profit on it. So you can build an audience and you can show off your work, and that's great. And there are a couple of exceptions where somebody, like the guy from Mortal Kombat, ended up getting a deal with Warner Brothers to make more of the web series and supposedly now make the movie.
Yeah, the guys with Halo, the guys that do Red versus Blue, they've made an entire, they're in like their 12th season now.
Yeah,
they've got this empire, this building empire, and yep. Bungie just loves them. I mean, Microsoft has also supported them and
yes.
letting them do what they want to do.
And that's the video games are a big difference. Video game makers tend to really appreciate fan films because they're doing something that doesn't infringe on what they're trying to do.
Doesn't compete. It accentuates.
Exactly. It adds you know, value to the brand by extending the universe. Whereas I think movie companies are looking at that and going, oh, now we can't do that thing. And instead of looking at it like, now people are more interested in our universe and, well, we'll just think of another thing to do, which is what they should be doing. Right. You know, they should be out there looking at fan films and going, oh yeah, that guy did great work, we should hire him to do something else. They're just afraid, which is not healthy.
I thought when Disney bought Star Wars, I thought, well, there goes you know, Star Wars fan films, you know, they'll probably start closing portals like the Force Net and all
yeah.
these other places. But the word on the street is that the Star Wars Fan Film Awards is a go this year.
Oh good.
So it sounds to me like Disney is going to maybe embrace, at least in the beginning,
yeah.
embrace the community and let them play in the sandbox as long as the same rules apply. And I yep. really have to credit George Lucas for really forcing his lawyers to turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that was a smart thing for them to do. And if you look at some companies that like Star Trek suffered heavily in the 90s for fighting fan films at first,
yeah.
and fan websites and stuff like that. And I think that it probably could have.
But then they started embracing it because,
I mean,
there's like some serious heavy hitting web series out there that are raising money.
Well, but they really started embracing it after the franchise had died.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of too little too late. And I'm glad that they're doing it. But I think it's still fairly, I don't know. I really don't know what to say about the Star. I love Star Wars. I like Star Wars more than Star Trek.
I agree.
The other way around. I'm a Trekkie first. Now that I've got you to say that. I grew
up with Star Trek.
It's
a vague memory because I'm not that old. It's
uh-huh.
a vague memory, but I remember the last season of Star Trek in first run.
Wow.
But like I said, it's a very vague memory, and I could be confusing it with those early days of reruns on Channel 13 and stuff. But
my youth was Star Wars, definitely. But yeah. then I discovered Star Trek, and I thought it was a smarter science fiction. You know, it's science fiction, whereas Star Wars is science fantasy.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about Star Trek though, because it seems to me that they're like war obsessed now.
Right. Like, well, here's the thing.
If you don't get in a laser battle, then it's just not Star Trek. And that's not what Star Trek was about.
Exactly.
At all.
The best Trek is on television, and it needs to come back to television.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like the Abrams universe for what it is.
Yeah.
If you can set aside your bias or deal and just sit down and eat some popcorn and enjoy the movie, then it's fine. But I do agree that Star Trek really belongs on TV.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I liked the first Abrams Star Trek movie a lot. I thought it was great. I have issues with the second one
from a story point of view.
But
I have notes.
Yeah. But that's I have issues with those writers and the stuff that they do. They're good at popcorn movies, and I feel sad that for a lot of Hollywood there's this idea that you can't do good action movies when there is loads of proof that says, yeah, you can. You can make a good action movie that is also a good movie. But there's still this, I don't know, fear of trying or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, they can always reboot. They could, you know, that's the funny thing is they could try it. And then if it doesn't work, they could just reboot and go back to what they were doing. I mean,
I suppose. There's no, and the nice thing about the first movie is that they created a universe that doesn't affect the Star Trek universe that we already know.
It was pretty clever how they did that.
I liked it. I have to admit.
I mean, yeah. I'm kind of burned out on the irony of being a Doctor Who fan. I'm kind of burned out of the time travel cliche that Star Trek kind of spawned.
Yeah.
But having said that, I love Doctor Who and I watch it every week. But
yeah, yeah. But well, Doctor Who is different because it doesn't have to obey rules.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to. I mean, what I like about Doctor Who is that it's not only a time travel deal, but it's also a space travel deal. So they could stay in one time frame and then just go all over the place. And it's
so it does,
like you said, it doesn't have to obey a set of rules. And but I also like the inspector.
Thank you. Well, you know, we are very, very intent on making good content. It's for us, the rules, we take a lot from Joss Whedon and his style, you know. So for us, it's character and story first, and then spectacle. And we're very, I mean, the script that we've got for season or for now the movie is just, it's clever and it's new. And it's interesting trying to parodize a show that doesn't. So calling ourselves a Doctor Who parody is almost a misnomer because Doctor Who already doesn't take itself very seriously. So how do you parody that? Well,
the parody kind of makes fun of. And
exactly, so, and that's not what we're doing
no,
at all.
It's
we're,
more of an
we're,
homage.
It's yeah, it's yeah. It's, and on the scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is deadly serious and 1 is, you know, flat out comedy, Doctor Who is somewhere around 6 or 7 because it has moments of levity and sometimes very funny. So we are putting ourselves more at the 4 line. So we're trying to be. You know, we're trying to be funny first, but also we have a very serious story that we're telling. And if you see the prequel episode, we killed one of our characters, and that's pretty – and it's a sad moment. So
that's awesome.
We're trying to show that we have that kind of range to pull off funny / serious.
I've also noticed that's kind of a trend now in television. Mm-hmm. is that major characters can get killed off during any season.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is interesting. I mean, it's just – you know, to, but in science fiction, you're never really dead. But
sure.
But I've noticed over just across a wide genre spectrum that we're getting this deal where, and I think it started with Lost, where you could just get killed off just to get killed off.
Yeah,
and that's interesting. It keeps everybody guessing.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to know that nobody's safe, and you could go. You know, whether or not the actor is in negotiations, you could just go. Like sometimes you lose actors because they Terry Farrell in Star Trek Deep Space Nine left because you know she wanted to go to another show or something, so they killed her character.
Ron Moore on Battlestar Galactica was killing off characters left and
oh,
right.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was like a bloodbath one season.
Great job at that. Yeah. So, but that's, I mean, that's a new thing of, you know, kind of the realism of shows mixed with the pathos of seeing characters that you've grown attached to, and knowing that nobody's safe. And of course, Game of Thrones is now famous for that. So,
yeah, but that's another one that's really crazy. So, where can people find out more about the Untitled web series, which is now an untitled feature film about a space traveler who can travel through time, aka Inspector Space Time?
You can go to theinspector.tv and get links to everything. So the right on the splash page there, we've got links to our Facebook and Twitter and all that. But then you also can click through to our website where you can watch the entire first season and the prequel episode, all our behind-the-scenes stuff. If you go to my personal YouTube channel, which is just Travis Ritchie, that's where I have all of my content. So I have playlists for Inspector Space Time, but also my sketch content and my other shows like Two Hot Guys in the Shower and stuff like that. So, and I think we, like I said, we also are, I'm trying to work on a number of things at the same time here. So we've got the movie going on, and while we're funding that, we've also got, I want to go back to Robot Ninja Gaygai and bring that back because I think
that's
it's
a hysterical title.
Yeah, and it's a good show. So I want to come back to that too.
Travis Ritchie, thank you for joining us on Dottle Talks Technology.
It was wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Dottle Talks Technology. For more information, visit our website at www.news.dottleme.com. Got a question or comment? You can drop me a line at james@dottleme.com. You can like us on Facebook and also subscribe and leave us feedback on iTunes. Dottle Talks Technology is a copyrighted podcast from Dottle News. Thanks for listening.